So this area was known as Task Force Helmand, and this is the area that was the sort of British responsibility.
As Captain Rupert Robinson prepares for his looming deployment, he's collating information about the terrain he'll be occupying over the next few months.
What are you looking for exactly?
Anything that can tell us anything about the enemy and what he plans to do so that we can make assessments about that and best set ourselves up to counter any threats. OK, if you want to come over and have a look at this map now.
Much of the information he works with is classified, and as I don't have clearance, we move to a local sandwich bar where he tells me more about his role.
Essentially, actually, most of what I do is based on reports that come in from all sorts of different intelligence gathering. They have the equipment, they put together reports based on what they can find out, and then I will sort of collate, analyse and assess all that information. It tends to be sort of quite a live process, so there's constantly more information coming in, and that's constantly developing the picture and my understanding of what the situation is, and in turn I'll then pass that understanding on to the rest of the team I work with.
The role of an intelligence officer is one that really started to take shape during the First World War, as Tristan Langlois from the National Army Museum in Chelsea explains.
When war broke out, between 30 and 40 rather ragtag and bobtail academics and musicians and artists got a telegram from the War Office saying to turn up in Southampton because they now were intelligence officers in the intelligence corps. They'd been contacted chiefly because they spoke French or German. They were trained in how to ride a motorcycle or how to ride a horse, and then they were sent into France and pretty much given the instruction to make themselves useful and left to get on with it.
You can see some of these boxes, all our archives, photographs and documents, are kept in acid-free folders.
To find out more about how the job was shaped because of the four-year conflict, Captain Robinson and I have come to the Royal Signals Museum in Dorset, where I'm hoping Adam Forty from the museum will help give us some further insight.
So what we've got here are some maps and plans. These are typical of the maps that would have gone over with the British Expeditionary Force in 1914. This is actually an automobile road map for cyclists and cars.
Amazing to think that they'd be working from the sort of maps that you might use for planning your sort of summer holiday or something. And the level of detail we expect in our mapping today and how quickly you can get hold of it, it makes us very fortunate.
These are a series of aerial photographs of the front line at various positions, and on them you can see that somebody's already begun to interpret them and put in the detail of all the various gunnery positions and artillery positions. The picture was created by a whole series of information coming in from different areas, but it was very simplistic in those times. You didn't have much technology. I'm sure things have changed from that time.
Yeah, and I suppose looking at this, in the same way in my role today, you identify the sort of doctrine and tactics the enemy used. So once you'd had a bit of experience, seen a number of trench systems, then you, by identifying specific locations within that, could start to sort of assess and build up a picture of what might be beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even when you're looking at a variety of aerial photographs, the more information you have, the more you can lay an interpretation upon that.
While aerial photography played a big part in the intelligence gathering during the latter stages of the First World War, Tristan Langlois outlines some of the rather more inventive methods that were used earlier in the conflict.
Baskets full of pigeons would be dropped behind enemy lines by parachute, and the pigeons would have labels attached to them explaining in French or Flemish to the locals who found them that if those locals had found any interesting information or useful information, they were to attach it to the pigeon and then release the pigeon, the homing pigeon, so it would go back to British lines. In fact, a surprising number of pigeons did make it home, and an enormous amount of very valuable information was gathered in that way.
While spy pigeons proved successful for the Allied forces, Adam Forty says the German army was also showing signs it was gathering intelligence about the movement of British troops.
There were occasions, famous occasions, where a relief column would reach the front, and as they approached the front, the Germans would play their regimental march and hold up boards welcoming them to the front. They also discovered from interrogating prisoners who were very proud of the fact that their equipment was really good and were quite openly, freely talk about how good their interception was. And of course, interrogation was another very, very useful form of discovering information. So these are actually outlines of where their cables were sitting. And on top of that, you've got actual trench maps.
First of all, when you look at it, is such an interesting conflict because it was such a stalemate, two sides dug in, facing one another, whereas now what we tend to face is much more of a 360-degree threat. So the idea of sort of having spies and human intelligence works a lot better in that context than it might in that sort of force-to-force stalemate.
What do you make of the information that these men 100 years ago had access to be able to carry out the role you do today?
In the role that I'm going out to Afghanistan to conduct, I'm going to be working quite closely with the Afghan army. And clearly they don't have access to a lot of the sort of technology and systems that we do. So actually, looking back 100 years at the kind of technology that was available there and looking at what they have available now, there's actually quite a lot of sort of parallels that can be identified.